Hello and welcome to our end of the year TechTarget Talking Data podcast. This is Jack Vaughn, writer for Search Data Management, and I'm with Ed Burns, writer for Search Business Analytics, and today we're going to do something a little different. Usually we do podcasts that show the background or add to stories we've reported ourselves. We may do some of that today, but really what we're going to try and focus on is the data of the year through some of the tweets we came across tweets that told trends. Privacy wasn't the only topic, but it was a big one. Ed, you're up to bat first. What have you got?
So one of the most interesting tweets I thought I saw this year was back in November from the New York Times. They were reporting on a recent poll that Pew had done, basically looking at the attitude of Americans towards online privacy. And one of the more interesting things I think they found was that 81% of Americans don't necessarily feel totally comfortable sharing content online on social networks. They feel that the government in particular may be listening in to what they're sharing. But then the flip side of that was the poll found that 55% still will continue to share content online if it means that they're able to use the online service for free. And so the headline of the story was Americans say they want privacy but act like they don't. And I think that that was really interesting, especially given some of the other developments from this year. I think we saw a lot more awareness of privacy. It came up over and over and over again, especially as more and more companies out there are, you know, basing their entire their whole business strategy on collecting and analyzing user data. And so I think people are becoming more aware of the fact that businesses are using their data occasionally in ways that they may not feel comfortable with, but at the same time, no one is really taking steps to control their data or limit the amount of data that they're putting out there in the world.
And one of the big stories of that kind had to do with Uber, which showed up more than once. It's a company that is using data and mobile devices and cloud computing to change the experience of getting in a cab. But as they've gotten some criticism, and it's not easy to move into a big city with established hackney carriage processes and do stuff, they have had some criticism, and were actually found out to be using some of the data they had to track journalists who were writing critically of Uber. And quite a few tweets on that topic. One we saw pointed to a New York Times story. According to the New York Times researchers, we cannot trust Uber. These actually, what it was some op-ed writers to academics involved in data and information management. Zeynep Tufekci and Braden King, and really they pointed out that the dark side of Uber could include them seeing that, you might have gone out Friday night, but you didn't come home till the sun was shining bright on Saturday, and really kind of following people's personal lives. They saw a need for some type of fiduciary trust to be established, I think looking towards next year, I think we'll see still more aspects where data professionals need to think about data privacy.
That's right, and that sort of follows into one of the other topics that I know you had been thinking about and talking with me about, and that was Facebook's privacy kerfuffle this year. I know they got in some hot water for releasing results from some data science experiments that they were doing on users. And I know it's a situation that also online dating site OkCupid was involved in as well. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, the Facebook study, and again, that was widely tweeted. It was tweeted from a conference that we were able to attend, which was a code conference at MIT. That's a conference devoted to digital experimentation, which is one way of looking at what Facebook was doing by providing different views of feeds to different users, some happy, some sad, and then seeing what happened. A tweet I remember Phil Guerra doing on that topic is, we need to understand how you are manipulated without creating paranoia. And the people at that MIT event looking at Facebook say, well, you should expect that. You should know that's going to happen. And I talked to some regular Facebook readers in my family, myself, to see. Not everybody cares that there may be testing going on of their reaction to input. But again, speakers at the conference that we covered discussed the advances in data science and the need that all this experimental evidence, especially Facebook's attempt to study what they called mass-scale emotional contagion on social networks, could conceivably get out of hand. And again, some kind of guidelines might be needed for digital experimentation, which is going on now every time you open up your web browser. So, you know, looking again at this and somewhat a dissimilar topic in a way, I know that you were talking with me about an Ad Age article. It had to do with small data versus big data. We give a lot of attention to the latter, and I guess we don't want to play favorites.
That's right. Back in October, Ad Age tweeted out an article called The Horrors of TMI. They're talking about too much information, which I thought was an interesting way to talk about small data. It's something that we've been hearing more and more about. I don't know if it's the backlash against the big data hype. You know, we've been hearing so much about big data over the last few years, and I think maybe some people are you know, not necessarily on that train. And so they're thinking a little bit more about what we can do with more reasonable size data sets. And so basically the point of the article was looking at all the data that online companies are collecting. You know, we're talking about Facebook and Uber, all the data that they're collecting from their users. And it was sort of questioning what exactly is the value of that data. And I think it sort of has a point there. You know, when I know at least when I look at my Facebook news feed, it's just a lot of people tweeting about going to the gym or eating dinner, things like that. And but so what is the real value there? You can do all sorts of fancy analytics and figure out that, you know, 90% of individuals between the ages of 25 and 30 like cheeseburgers. But so what? You know, I feel like that's maybe something we already knew, and there isn't really a ton of value there. And so this article was looking at or sort of questioning how much businesses can expect to get out of collecting data from individuals, especially given the way things are today. There's so much data out there about every single person, and even businesses that aren't traditionally in the business of tracking customers, they can still buy data from third-party data brokers, and a lot of businesses are investing in that. But I think it is a good occasion to sort of step back and question why exactly we are collecting all this data.
Sort of a call for common sense and differentiate between a nice to know and a need to know. And I think we've seen shifting gears here, say in the Hadoop world, that you can do a proof of concept, but then what? And the question may be, I may have gathered all this data, but would I actually profit from putting some operational systems into production based on that? So a final tweet here. I'm going to look at something on the business side, and that's the IPO of Hortonworks, Hadoop company. It happened on Friday, December the 12th, and I was sitting on my kitchen table. Actually, I was sitting at my kitchen table that evening when I saw Gartner analyst Merv Adrian's tweet. Horton was offered at 16, opened at 24, closed at $26.38. Then he went on, the market's appetite is remarkable. Is it irrational hadubarence, he asked. And kind of a fun way of reminding us of old Alan Greenspan, who ran the economy for a while, and bringing in the question, what this means for Hadoop. I think Merv Adrian and other people would say it does show that the Hadoop market is turning into a business, and although, and they did raise $100 million in that IPO, it gave them $1 billion valuation, which may be a bit high. I'm not a business guy, but I do know that data managers have to have some sense of the future of the products or companies that they buy software from, and would like to know that happened this year, 2014.
Well, all right, Jack. Thanks for coming in, and it was really good to get a chance to look back at some of the significant topics in the world of data management and analytics this past year that maybe we didn't get a chance to write as much about, but were interesting nonetheless. So to our listeners, until next year.